Mr. Herman.
Poop again!
Party on, dude!
In 5, 4, 3, 2.
Extreme close up!
Welcome, everybody, back into the Radcast.
Hi.
Hello, our first new episode in a couple weeks. I know we ended our Halloween stretch of episodes talking about Halloween nostalgia with Jeremy Weed.
Yep.
But we are back after a week break, and we are back with a quite huge event,
yes,
if you will. This is an incredibly special episode for a myriad of reasons, which I know we say that a lot whenever we say big things.
No less true.
Yeah, it's definitely true right now. First and foremost, if you saw the title, because I put it in big, bold letters and numbers,
yep,
we have reached a milestone
100.
That I always believed we could on.
Right.
I mean, you're bound to do it over the course of 3 podcasts.
Right.
At least one of them, you stay at it, you're going to reach it. We are at episode 100.
It's a big deal.
Of
100
the Radcast.
Episodes of anything.
It is.
And it is a commitment.
Yeah, and I won't, you know, wax poetic too much right now,
yeah,
but God, it's you don't think about it when you're in the midst of, like,
no,
when, cuz we've gotten for the last 4 years, almost 5 years, we just gotten into the routine,
yeah,
of recording. And then after it's all said and done, I,
yeah,
edit.
Record, edit, post.
Yeah,
record,
edit,
post. And it just becomes routine. Yeah. You don't think about it.
And if I'm being honest, it's less and less I'll listen to the episode after it's released because I just spent a few days listening
right,
to
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
And it's like you said.
You're on to the next thing.
Yeah, you get into a routine. But then from an outsider's perspective, you just mentioned, yeah, we're almost at 100 episodes, almost like flippantly. And they're like,
yeah,
holy shit, that's amazing.
It's like, oh, yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah. But it's one of those things because it's tough because we're self-deprecating. Everybody,
yeah,
in our family is, and our guests today can probably attest to that.
Yeah.
But it's just, it is something to be proud of.
Yeah.
100 mm-hmm. episodes.
Yeah. And we are, yeah, immensely proud of it.
Incredibly,
yeah,
proud. Incredibly proud. So much so we're going to celebrate a wonderful movie we grew up watching and grew up loving, and still one of my top 10 favorite movies of all time.
I feel like a lot of kids are this way. You pick a solid rotation of movies,
yeah,
that you just keep watching and keep watching and keep watching.
Yeah.
This was one of them. Like this, Indiana Jones, Temple of Doom, Angels in the Outfield,
Dennis the Menace, Jurassic Park.
Like that was our rotation.
Mm-hmm.
And Willow. We're doing Willow.
Yeah, we're doing Willow.
Was in this rotation.
Yeah. And definitely someone, like I had mentioned just a moment ago, someone who can relate to not just kind of our familial bond with it, but just the ideas and the fantasy world it builds and creates.
Yep.
Joining us for the first time in a little over 2 years.
Yeah.
Last time we had was right at the beginning of 2020, where we talked about Incubus, Make Yourself.
20th anniversary,
yeah. Our brother Andrew is with us. Hello,
Hello,
Andy.
How's it going?
It's going.
Oh, it's fine.
It's a wonderful fall Friday afternoon, a few days before Halloween.
It is.
Yeah.
Colors have changed in the trees, and they're falling nicely, so now everything's a nice mix of colors before we go all dark and brown and cold. And
it is getting dark early now again.
Yeah.
We're back at it. But I mean, it's very lush with reds and oranges.
Yeah, we still got some nice colors. And you know what, Missouri, for all of its issues, or you know how people see it, it really is a beautiful place to be in the fall.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you know, it's yeah. It's good to be here.
Yeah, yeah.
It's good to be here.
Yeah, exactly. all
yes.
of that.
So there are no leaves in this room.
Yeah.
There's no sign of fall in this room. But
how are you doing today? The fall leaves.
Well,
are
yes.
red and brown.
Oh, the foliage.
Hey,
the
focus,
foliage.
Focus. We already.
We come out here every year for the foliage.
Now, all you see right now are the Bee Gees, the Three Stooges, and Incubus, Make Yourself.
Well,
there
I mean,
it is.
I'm looking actually at a Halloween poster here that shows some beautiful fall foliage.
Yes,
so.
There you go.
Yes, exactly.
Exactly.
So we do have it in the studio with us.
This is unrelated because I know I just told you to focus, but all of us have ADD.
ADHD. ADHD. Thank you.
Yes. Yeah. I'm hyperactive.
Yes. Yes.
I'm a hyper-hypo. hyperglycemo and hyperactive.
Yeah.
Just seeing the, it's a very painting-esque looking Halloween poster.
Yeah.
It reminds me, I don't know the details. I just saw the title of the post on Instagram, the BBC saying, a painting in this British museum has been upside down for like the last 50 years.
What the hell?
I was like, that's hilarious.
How did they realize that?
I don't know.
Like the artist come in and they're like, What the hell is this?
Yes.
What the hell is this?
Well, isn't art up to interpretation?
You go upside down. It's upside down.
You're an artist. Isn't it up to interpretation?
I mean, once you take a piece of artwork and put it out there, it is kind of open to, you know, whatever people take from it. I guess it is the joy of art. But for it to hang in a gallery for that long. I don't know the story, but to hang in a gallery that long incorrectly that's a major mishap. Right?
Yeah, but maybe they could have just been like, no, it's supposed to be like that. It's art. I'm interpreting it like that.
Yeah.
It's back on track here.
It's a Willow.
Warwick Davis. If you all have been with us through 100 episodes, you know we get sidetracked very easily.
I mean, fast forward.
But,
skim. Exactly. Or search. I mean, treat it like a cassette tape.
Yeah, exactly. Y'all remember cassette tapes.
Go forward, see what happens, and decide if you're going to stay there.
Yeah.
A man who went forward to see what would happen outside of his comfort zone is Willow Offgood.
Yes.
So
great segue.
Oh, I thought that was going to be more about me.
That, you too. We'll see that you probably relate to Willow quite a bit.
Well,
yes.
Well, okay. But Willow, getting into the movie, starting to go into the nitty-gritty of what we take from it, the story itself. If you're listening to this, there's more than likely you've seen it. And if you haven't, hopefully we convince you to see it. Mm-hmm. There will be spoilers ahead for almost 35-year-old movie.
And we probably won't give a spoiler alert. We're just they'll be enmeshed in this.
So Willow was released May 20th, 1988, directed by Ron Howard, starring Warwick Davis as Willow Offgood, Val Kilmer as Mad Mardigan, Joanne Whalley as Sorsha. I know.
Sorry.
Oh, bless it.
Yes.
They got married because of this movie.
Uh-huh. Gene Marsh.
Val Kilmer and Joanne Whalley.
Right. Yeah. Gene Marsh as Queen Bev Morda. Patricia Hayes as Rizelle. Billy Barty as the High Aldwin. Gavin O'Hurley as Eric. Pat Roach as Kael. K-A-E-L. Kael.
I think it's Kale.
Kale?
Yeah.
David.
Kale's coming!
Oh, yeah. Yeah. David Steinberg is Migosh. Kevin Pollak is Rule. Rick Overton is Frangine. And Ruth and Kate Greenfield is Alora Dannon with Philip DeFrank. Philip Fondacaro as Von Carr. Mark Northover as Burglecut. Julie Peters as Kaya. And Maria Halvo as Shirlindria, with a box office of $57.2 million on a $35 million budget. On any of our shows, we do something called What Was on the VHS. So I'm just going to say what was on the VHS.
Yes.
So the 1988 home video release didn't have any coming attractions. The 1995 one, all it had was a Columbia TriStar presents the Movies of the Family collection with films like The Babysitter's Club.
Yes.
Ooh.
My Girl.
Yep.
Indian in the Cupboard. Ghostbusters, Milo and Otis, Bye Bye Birdie, Willow, etc.
Is that the one we had, the 95 release?
I don't think so, because I don't remember any previews on that.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. So that one that you just mentioned is one that we grew up with. So was that the first time you ever had seen Willow, was when we had the VHS at home?
You know, it's hard to say, thinking back that far, to when was the first time I saw Willow. Because, of course, Willow came out, what, 88. So Willow was more of a background at certain points because, again, it's hard to remember back to when I was 4 years old.
Right.
Yeah.
And what that moment was like seeing Willow for the first time, but it being in the movie sphere and being part of pop culture and it being this kind of big movie that was supposed to be coming out, or at least it seems like, with, you know, having Ron Howard and it coming from Lucasfilms.
Right.
And,
yeah.
And its cast, it was an ambitious movie that was going to be in the consciousness.
Yeah.
But I more remember the action figures.
Yeah.
You know, I remember Tonka. God, who was the general with the skull face.
Kale.
Yes. Which that character always really stuck with me. Yeah. But I had like this little action figure, not a lot of articulation, but just a very simple action figure of Kale, and he terrified me.
Yeah.
But in this awesome kind of way, where I was like, "This is so cool." So to speak to, I don't know, Willow, when I first saw it, it was in the subconscious, and I'm sure I saw it on VHS, or we did have cable
growing up,
which was kind of interesting to think about. I can't remember exactly when we got cable, but I think, I don't know, actually, to answer your question, I don't think I saw it on VHS. It's hard to remember if I saw it on cable or VHS, but either way, it was a movie that stuck with me.
Yeah.
That eventually, when I did get more into Willow, when I did start exploring it more, it was a VHS copy. Mm-hmm. So I guess I should say when Willow really became a movie to me, opposed to this, I don't know, action figure, a toy, something in the background, would have been on VHS.
Yeah.
Plus, when you see something so much, it's hard to pinpoint when was the first time I saw it.
Yeah.
Kind of
Especially at that time, too. I mean, I had, you know, Rambo underwear. Yeah. I didn't even, first off, didn't even know what Rambo was. Mm-hmm. And then there was a cartoon made of a movie that was not appropriate for a cartoon. I mean, this is absolutely wild that that was just a total marketing grab. But, I mean, you think about it, too. When I was growing up, and of course when you guys were growing up too, 80s and 90s were primed for basically creating content to sell toys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So again, the world, you kind of experience it at certain points just through what toys you had. You know, what cards did you collect? You know, knowing more about a tangible item in your hands opposed to where the source material is coming from.
Exactly.
So. I think it was kind of in the background, in the periphery for us as it became more prominent, I would say, for like you and Samantha and mom and dad watching the movie. We weren't at an age to where it was entirely interesting, but I do remember the VHS cover, which the art on that is beautiful, like the movie cover, like the movie poster, and you see, you know, I remember you look at the back and one of the images is General Kale with that skull
mask. I'm not watching that,
but like the cover is,
but it's still cool.
But like the cover is, of course, Warwick Davis, and you have the big head of Mad Mardigan and Sorsha in there. It's all artistically done, but I believe it probably became something of interest because we had just watched Lord of the Rings back when Netflix, you mail it in and you request it on the website.
Yeah. Back when movies were films.
Yeah,
exactly.
I remember Samantha used Netflix a lot.
Yeah.
It was either Mom or Samantha Netflixed Fellowship right after it came out. And I remember not caring one way or other, but they're like, come watch it. We all watched it pretty much as a family. And as it was going on, a switch flipped in my head. And it opened the floodgates to where I started really liking and appreciating Star Wars and Lord of the, and just the sword and sorcery adventure.
The fantasy stuff. Mm-hmm. The sword and sorcery fantasy, something that's based in this parallel kind of, I don't know, ancient age, you know, where you still have knights and kings and sorcery and stuff, which is, you know, kind of just, you know, hangs out there as this, you know, beautiful fantasy land that has been played on ever, you know.
Oh yeah, just, and it's a fantasy world, so you can't be like, man, I wonder, you know, what which year this parallels. Da, da, da. It's a fantasy, so the rules of a current timeline don't really apply.
Well, I think I was talking to Steven earlier. I didn't want to say too much, but a lot of the appeal of Willow, it comes from the fact that you have this character that is everyday. He is normal as can be. Mm-hmm. He's got dreams. He has aspirations. You know, he's a good person, and he's just trying to do right by his family and his kids.
Yeah.
And out of nowhere, he is asked to step in a situation where he's comfortable, and he resists the whole time. Basically, coming to the point of the beautiful appeal of Willow to me is the story of the hero. Yep. You know, the hero's tale, you know, author and I don't know what else you call him, activist, Joseph Campbell, talks about, you know, the hero of a thousand faces, right, and how the mythos that is passed down from generation to generation kind of tells us a story about what it is to be human,
mm-hmm,
what it is to live every day with hopes and dreams and aspirations, yeah, and living this existence that we don't exactly have a clear definition of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is it to be, you know, human? What is it to be alive? You know, what is the purpose of it? What is my meaning? You know, Joseph Campbell talks about the fact that this is played out throughout every stage of human history.
Mm-hmm.
For as long as we have had culture and have been recording it, there is always the story of this individual that is loved and is just living this, mm-hmm, everyday life, but doesn't quite have belief in themselves,
mm-hmm,
yep,
and being thrust into a position where they have to be uncomfortable, they have to doubt themselves, but they just have to go out and do this kind of spiritual calling, this, yeah, thing that comes out, yep, and forces them, mm-hmm, into a period of growth. And instead of shying away and living with regret, the hero's tale or the left-handed path,
mm-hmm,
kind of explores what is it to take the alternate route? What is it to lean into a situation in life where you feel uncomfortable? And what is it to understand that people around you see you, love you, care about you,
mm-hmm,
and if they're believing in you, how, yeah, you, somebody that might doubt yourself,
yep, mm-hmm,
can look to those around you for affirmation and realize that maybe you are as great as people think you are. Instead of, you know, like you said in the intro, we're kind of self-deprecating a little,
yeah,
bit, you know, as a family in our humor. But to come around to the point where not only are you into a situation where you're uncomfortable, but now you're in a situation where you're uncomfortable, but you believe in yourself to champion it.
Yeah.
And you know that on the other side,
mm-hmm,
you're either where you're at, but you're probably going to be a little bit stronger because,
yeah,
mm-hmm, of it. So, you know, when Lord of the Rings finally takes something like, you know, Tolkien, which up till Willow,
mm-hmm,
yeah, I mean, there really wasn't anything live action,
mm-hmm,
that could, no, touch. I don't, sorry.
No,
yeah, hit the, yeah, mic there.
No, that's okay.
But there wasn't, I mean, of course, there are the fantasy movies and these kind of, you know, barbarian tales, and but the kind of world of Tolkien and that kind of, I guess, sword and fantasy, that,
yeah,
Dungeons, like, and Dragons
sword,
kind,
yeah,
of world,
yeah,
hadn't really been hit very well.
Right.
In live action. Of,
yeah,
course, you had movies like Legend and then Beastmaster before,
yeah,
it.
Like Roger,
and then,
Corman movies.
Yeah, I mean, you've always had these kind of epic tales done live action.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Willow was finally that moment where the special effects could, of course, not do near as much as what you,
right,
can do,
well,
now.
Yeah.
But finally made it something where you could do this fantasy film,
mm-hmm,
live action that hadn't been done as well as it could be,
yeah,
hasn't been done effectively to tell the story,
mm-hmm,
you know, why, like Tolkien, like any, like The Hobbit had been a cartoon,
mm-hmm,
yeah,
you know, anything Lord of the Rings could not be touched because how are you gonna do this,
right, the scope is
how are you gonna do the material,
yeah,
justice,
mm-hmm, yeah,
you know, how can you tackle this with the special effects available,
yeah, exactly,
to mimic that, which is also I think why up till Willow it'd been so difficult without the special effects, because the story that's told through these fantasy novels is it's relatable, but the what you get from the written word,
mm-hmm,
opposed to what you can do,
yeah,
you know, actually, mm-hmm, like on screen, there's so much else that has to go into,
yeah,
it.
Yeah, there's so much that you can do, like with the Tolkien novels. I mean, all of, like, even, you know, the Lord of the Rings, but also The Hobbit. Willow is a movie that if you want to take just this element of these grandiose stories you can tell, applying the ideas of the hero's journey. You can take the hero, like the Odyssey or the Iliad. You,
right,
can take them on all these different journeys that could, you know, span 10, 20 years, but, you know, to kind of make that more concise, to take, mm-hmm, Willow, which is essentially still a self-contained,
yeah,
movie, and still with special effects and with the storytelling, which at the end of the day, like Ron Howard says, the story is king, and make it something that's effective and effectively tells a story with three good acts of a rising action, a peak falling action, and telling it really well.
Yeah, and the hero's journey you were talking about is, like you said, the Iliad or the Odyssey. That's impressive enough, but I think what resonates the most about like a Willow or a Lord of the Rings is that the characters are not who you would pick to be your heroes.
Right.
Like you in Lord of the Rings, it's the Hobbit. Mm-hmm. It's Hobbits. Mm-hmm. In Willow, Warwick Davis and a lot of characters are little people.
Nelwyns.
Their race are called Nelwyns in this movie, but just take that it's an unsuspecting person, just a normal everyday person, and then take the trials and tribulations of a quote-unquote a normal sized person, and that cranks it up, because this is a person who in everyday life has to adjust to the world around him. So now you're throwing him out into the vast expanse of this fantasy world, and he has to navigate that in order to achieve their mission, achieve their goal.
I think Willow even says, he's like, you know, but I'm too short even for a Nelwyn.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and I think the thing with Willow too, that we can talk all day about the comparisons between Willow and how it borrows from Tolkien, but also how George Lucas kind of borrowed from, you know, all the other source material from Star Wars, and again, this hero's tale, the writings of Joseph Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
Willow, the movie, takes place in a far less, I don't know how to say it, fantastical world, maybe, than Lord of the Rings.
More grounded.
Yeah. It's one of the things, of course, you know, you're limited by special effects at the time,
right,
of what you can do, but really, it was effective storytelling mixed with just the right level of special effects to where it wasn't so jarring to where you're like, okay, now I'm kind of out of the story. I've been taken away because the effects aren't that great. Or even just like classics, like, you know, stuff done by Harryhausen.
Oh, yeah. Ray Harryhausen.
Stop motion stuff. So, I mean, that stuff is fantastic. It's brilliant. But the whole time, you know, I can't fully buy into this.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Willow kind of was at that right juxtaposition where the special effects was right, the storytelling was great, but the world that it existed within didn't seem too grandiose.
No.
So you can kind of imagine this happening within a time and a place. You could see this happening, you know, back in the medieval times, where you have these ideas of knights and kings and everyone going to fight on horseback, but there's also, you know, kind of the druid stuff coming from, you know, Ireland and Gaelic kind of, you know, religions, where you're like, there is this mysterious, mythical kind of way about the world. Magic does exist.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something that I think falls into the subconscious, that you're like, okay, well, this is relatable, but it's just the right amount of fantastic to where it's not real, and you can dive into it, but it's not so like, oh my God, Eye of Sauron, like, or it's like you're digging up trolls. There's just enough fantastic in it that takes you to another world, but the landscape is, for the most part, all realistically shot. Even if it was just put up against that back screen, everything about it still had that vibe of, this could happen. This could have happened. Or this could exist within a world that I live in.
It's a grounded relatability.
Yeah.
And if I may just give it like a quick synopsis of Willow.
Of course.
So basically, this evil sorceress, Queen Bev Morda, who's like all powerful, there's this prophecy that a special baby will be born who will grow to kill Bev Morda. So basically, she's scoping the land, trying to basically observe all these newborn babies, who she's trying to check if they have this special symbol to indicate that that's the special baby.
And not just kill Bev Morda just so she can take her, but to, because Bev Morda is going to essentially ruin more lives than she already has, and have this reign of terror that she'll keep herself alive forever.
She basically conquers villages and stuff like that.
But it's this princess and who's going to become a queen, who's going to bring peace.
And so this nursemaid basically takes her out, and then she's caring for her, and then eventually she dies. She gets killed by Bab Morda's dogs. She sends what's the baby's name?
Alora Dannon.
Alora Dannon, who we find out that's the baby's name, sends her up the river, and she lands.
A la Moses.
A la Moses.
Yeah. And also another kind of just drawing back to how George Lucas borrows a lot from, you know, what Joseph Campbell has to say about stuff. Besides, you know, the baby up the river, but also, you know, how when Jesus was born, you know, how they went around looking for this child that was prophesied to come and take down a kingdom.
Yeah.
And that, again, why, you know, in the Bible, Jesus had to, and his family had to go to Egypt, had to escape the area that they were in. You know, they're, and I think there's maybe probably a few other biblical accounts where, you know, basically they're looking for a prophesied individual.
Yeah.
So how this is a, you know, kind of something that still borrows on things that are familiar, but it's done in this new way, especially as a female character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Opposed to a male character too, which I think is definitely something worth noting about with the whole movie in general is, besides Willow being this fantastic character that you went along this journey with, there was a lot of strength and a lot of showing of women are the ones that are driving this narrative. Yeah. Women are the ones that are there, powerful, and, you know, kind of, really, they are the strongest force. Yeah. The feminine force is the strongest force.
They're either sorceress, either good or bad. They're soldiers. Or even if you're talking about Willow's wife, Kaya, she's still like this very...
Talk about strength.
Stable, strong. Like,
strong character.
Oh, yeah. And to wait, as we'll get into, like, Willow's gone for a long time. And she has to basically hold down the fort. And she, when Alora Dannon just comes floating into this Nelwyn village and is found by Willow's kids, and basically Willow is really against it. He's like, it's a Daikini baby. Daikini is like you and I, just... quote-unquote normal-sized people, but he describes them as giants.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it's a Daikini child. What we need to do is send it up the river. It's not our problem.
Yeah.
And basically, Willow's wife is like, we have to take care of this baby. And so basically, through a series of events, they have to take the baby to the High Council and stuff like that. Willow is this farmer who's this aspiring sorcerer.
Yeah. And honestly, his wife, really, for – if you talk about concentrating kind of a character with as little screen time as she had, she was like at every major point, even when at the very end, you know, he just has her lock of hair.
Yeah.
And he's like,
yes,
that's why I'm doing
courage,
this.
Willow.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why courage.
Yeah.
Like, just this, she's this fantastic, very understated
character
in the movie. When you have something like, you know, Bab Morda, and you have these epic kind of battles that are going on, and, why am I forgetting the sorceress?
Rizel. Yeah, yes. The good one. Yeah.
Yes. So, you know, I have Rizel, and it's really their battle. But, you know, Willow's wife, and forgive me for not remembering her name right now.
Kaya
is this fantastic character that is so necessary and really only has important moments.
Yeah,
that drive this narrative forward.
And so, with a character who doesn't have a lot of screen time, at the end when they reunite, You're elated. You're so happy.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, this is beautiful. Because any other, if they didn't write her that way, if she was just Willow's wife, you'd be like, oh, that's his wife. Well, cool. He gets to see his wife again.
No, it's his other half. It's his counterbalance.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's his counterbalance that brings calmness and understanding. And she really is a beautiful character. But not to go too far off.
No, that's okay.
Topic there.
But basically, Willow is content with just kind of keeping her under wraps. Bab Morda's dogs come through the Nelwyn village, and then he's like, okay, we need to... Because at first he's like, we can't take it in front of the High Council because they're going to think it's a bad omen. So the next time something bad happens, they're going to blame me.
Yeah, which gives the impression that a lot of people, like the Burgle Cuts like crew, they look down. Willow is kind of a laughing stuff. He's
a farmer.
Yeah,
he's a wannabe sorcerer.
Yeah, he's a farmer who thinks he thinks he'll be the next High Alwyn's apprentice. Willow.
And which you were doing a synopsis of the movie for those that hadn't seen it. Right, Matthew?
Yeah.
So like I don't think we even talked about about Burgle Cut yet.
No, yeah,
we
yeah,
got
yeah.
to the high cancel, so I didn't mean to.
No, no, that's okay. That's
that,
okay.
Essentially, like the Burgle Cut is just the like a debt collector,
yeah.
type person. He's
just a sniveling worm.
Well, he's not just the debt collector, but he is essentially the person that's at the top of the high council.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I can't remember his exact title, but he's the one over the village. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Burgle Cut actually carried more weight than I think the story really emphasized. And
yeah.
he had to go with the fact that you knew he was the guy in charge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know. So, but Burgle Cut again mm-hmm. was basically guy in charge of the village, but a total asshole.
Yeah,
just
oh,
an
yeah.
absolute just yep. the bully.
Yep.
of the town, but also yeah. the person in charge. Just mm-hmm. nothing really to say for themselves.
Oh, yeah.
But they're in power, and it's a nice little piece to show that, you know, again, he's your shitty boss at work.
Yeah,
exactly.
Or, you know, he is your boss at work that you don't like. He is that person that hassles you, but really you look at him and you go, what do you got? Mm-hmm. So, again, another necessary piece to drive,
yeah.
you know, the character of Willow and kind yeah. of you just going, oh, man, you know, here's this nobody. Here's
yeah.
this just everyday guy or everyday person, and this is why it's so attractive. Because even in the face of this person harassing them,
yeah.
they're there every day belittling them. In the end, they get theirs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In the right amount of weight.
They get a burn. Yeah,
and as best as you can hope.
On
really,
yeah, exactly.
I mean, honestly, life doesn't fully punish those that you feel have done wrong by you.
Mm-hmm.
There's not always that justice that you can see.
Yeah.
But, you know,
mm-hmm.
sometimes just seeing somebody get pooped on by a bird
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That you don't like
Throwing
is enough for you to go, hey,
yeah.
okay, the day wasn't so bad.
Oh, yeah.
yeah.
And Burgle Cut is, he's not so nefarious that you're like, I want to see this guy, like, get destroyed. He's like, he gets pooped on. He baby pukes on him. That's enough. Like,
yeah.
that's fine. He got his. Like, that's
yeah.
fine. But they take him in front. They take the... Basically, after taking it from the High Council, the High Alduin, who's this this high like sorcerer yeah. or whatever, played
Laura
by
Dannon. That, they're
yeah.
taking Laura Dannon.
They're taking yeah. Laura
the,
Dannon.
After that, the village got attacked.
Yeah, the village
by
got
the
attacked.
Rat dogs.
Yeah,
the
exactly.
Terrifying
and basically,
rat dogs.
The High Alduin tasks Willow. It's like you have to find the first Daikini and hand this baby off
mm-hmm.
to the Daikini. And he's like, go to the crossroads. So that's the initial mission.
Right.
They go to the crossroads. They meet Mad Mardigan. We'll get into Mad Mardigan, and then through a series of events, mishaps, all that stuff, basically Willow decides, like, I can't just drop this baby off to the I got to make sure this baby gets to a loving family so she realizes her potential.
Yeah.
And through that, you get a bunch of great characters
yeah, and
fantasy
and
worlds
more
and stuff.
Than just that, he learns who this baby is.
Yeah.
The prophecy behind it. And more importantly, the baby has chosen him.
Yeah.
Because, you know, with even though she's just a baby, she if she's this answer to this prophecy, she has some sort of intuition.
She's communicating almost this higher power,
yeah.
which is
Shalindria, which is like this fairy,
yeah,
this fairy queen.
Yeah.
And Shalindria says, you know, you are of pure of heart, Willow,
mm-hmm.
pure of intention.
She likes
and,
you.
Yeah,
yeah,
she likes you. And even before, you know, Willow leaves, the High Alduin rolls these bones, and he says, you know, the bones say nothing. And he's essentially seeing if Willow's up to the task to do this. He's like, do you love this child? And Willow's like, yes, I do.
Yeah.
And you believe it,
mm-hmm.
too. And that's not just because Warwick Davis
is incredible,
amazing
that's,
and charming.
Yeah.
But it's because you can see, even in the first 20 minutes, maybe
yeah.
25 minutes, what type of character
mm-hmm.
Willow is.
Yeah.
It's
an inconvenience, but it's a child at
yeah.
the end of the day.
Uh-huh. It's
and that's where his heart
and,
is
I mean,
leaning.
You see
yeah.
how he loves his children.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
like, and he essentially, it's become more than just find the first Daikini you see and make your way
yeah.
back. It's Willow has now found this higher purpose
yep.
and this higher cause
mm-hmm.
that he must fulfill more than just finding the Daikini. He now must go to a certain spot. He now must, you know, it's more
mm-hmm.
than just hand it off.
Plans change.
Yeah.
They get to the spots they're supposed to go, and they've been destroyed. They're not what they
mm-hmm.
seem, all that stuff. So then it's this extra layer.
Isn't that life, though?
Yeah,
too? Like,
exactly.
I mean, kind of like touching on the, you know, why the movie, I think,
mm-hmm.
is so lasting is the fact that you guys have touched on so many things that are just part of life,
mm-hmm.
thinking, oh my gosh, this is going to be, you know what? Simple. It's easy. You know, the whole movie, you know, the evil general is running around, you know, destroy the village.
Yeah.
Get the baby.
Yeah. You know, exactly.
Destroy the monster.
It's easy.
Get the baby. Watch. Get the baby. And in the end, it's just so easy for him. Mm-hmm. You know, not to exalt him as a character a little too. But again, the idea that in life you're like, oh, well, this can be quick, this can be easy, no problem. And then you step in, you're like, oh, that was not quick.
Yeah.
That was not easy. Mm-hmm. That was far more involved than I thought it was going to be. It took a little more of me than I thought it was going to be. And every step of the way, it's going to be this. It's going to be.
Yeah.
It's not that.
Yeah.
But
yeah, what not do you do?
All, but not, but not all is lost.
Right.
You know, I need to keep moving forward because in the end, I know I'm doing the right thing.
Yeah.
In this. It might not be going the way I thought it was. But I mean, if everything went the way you thought it would, then first off, we don't have a movie.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's really not that interesting. Yeah. And then play the lottery and then leave us all alone. You know, because most of us are out here just every turn. You're like, okay, this can be it. This can be all right.
Mm-hmm. And it's not.
And you know what? But sometimes it is.
Yeah. And some.
But
yeah.
But that's why the movie is so interesting. Is because again, it's showing us that, you know, for Willow, of course, you can't have it go right a lot for him up until the very end. Of course, it goes very well. But it just goes to show, like, you know, every step of the way, you're going to be encountering something that you never thought you were going to be.
Yep.
Or you now have to grow in a way that you didn't think you were going to have to grow. Yep. Mm-hmm. And that you thought, well, okay, it's going to be easy, just like everybody in town. Well, even the wizard.
Yeah.
Even the elder of that town.
Yeah.
Is kind of saying, oh, well, hey, listen, follow the bird.
Yeah.
Oh, the bird's going back to town. Don't pay attention
follow
to the bird.
River.
Yeah. Yeah. So he is strong enough to show you this thing that Willow has to start working towards, but again, even not he doesn't even know what they're gonna have to. It's so simple. It's not a world for you. Go out there, give it off for the first person. Mm-hmm. Come back.
Yep.
Only enough food to get there. Come back.
Yep.
But I mean, how many times in life has that happened?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So simple. So easy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And little by little, he takes a whole cavalry of people with him.
Yeah.
And then little by little, they start to drop. And they don't die, but they're like, Willow, we can't keep doing this. Like, I got to go back. I got to go back home.
And kind of going back to a little moment in the movie that made me laugh watching it recently is actually the first Daikinis they come in contact with are Sorsha and the general.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So actually, they're really the first people they should have handed it off to should have ended the movie within about 5 minutes.
Exactly.
Which I kind of had a good laugh. I'm like, well, actually,
those,
I'm sorry, Burgle-Cut, the first Daikinis you encountered were people you're trying to avoid. So
I know they're ransacking your town, but like you can't be like, here's a baby.
But yeah,
but the guy in the cage, in the cage, we know he's.
Yeah.
But that just shows how different Willow and to an extent Migosh are. His best friend Migosh
hung in there as long as
Migosh was ready to go
Willow told he's like, go home, Migosh.
Then he's like, I gotta go.
He's like, tell Kaya I love her. Like go, like I must do this. And Migosh, you know, apprehensively goes, but it just goes to show how different Willow is that, you know, people like Burgle-Cut, who almost feel like he doesn't have a moral compass, or warriors like Vonkar and Vonkar's man, you know, one of Vonkar's soldiers.
Yeah.
I mean, these are men.
The guy from Bad Santa.
Yeah, Tony Cox.
They're there to follow orders.
They're there
to do what the person in charge says. Mm-hmm. And even though they're strong and they're noble, they still are like, well, it's the guy in charge, and I got to do what the guy in charge says.
And in Willow, it's more than just find the first Daikini, because because he wants to go home as much as anybody, because he's out of a comfort zone that he was fine staying within.
Yep.
But he just knew there was something wrong with these Daikinis. And then even as they, and we'll circle back to Mad Mardigan, but even as they hand off the baby to Mad Mardigan, and Mad Mardigan is off, you know, just going to do, you know, he gives them his word that he'll take care of her at the time.
Yeah.
But even when him and Migosh are going to start making their way back to the Shire.
Yeah.
He knows. And also Willow is a soon to be sorcerer. He needs to learn to trust himself and his instincts. Mm-hmm. And it's the,
When he's walking by with Migosh, and he's like, Migosh, did we do the right thing?
He's like, of course.
Yeah, and he's you know, using that word again, apprehensive. You can tell he's conflicted. He's like, the more I realize, the more I'm drawn to this baby, the more I feel like this is continuously bigger than I am. Like, I just don't feel right just handing it off to any Daikini.
Yeah. I need to use discernment.
Yeah.
Like,
and then we see the brownies, and then it leads into Shalindria, letting him know who Alora Dannon is.
Yeah, exactly. Andrew, you mentioned the guy in the cage. probably, if anyone who watches Willow, Val Kilmer,
Mad Mardigan.
Yeah, Mad Mardigan.
Mad Mardigan.
Yeah, Batman.
Yeah. Mad Mardigan is highly due to Val Kilmer's performance, mm-hmm. which was the majority of it, I think, was ad-libbed.
A lot of it was ad-libbed.
Crazy to me, and just a proof to how great a performer Val Kilmer is.
And a physical comedian, too. That's something you said about the movie, too, and his contribution was a definite comedic aspect that he brought to it.
No issue with making himself look foolish.
Which is what drives that character, too. It makes him likable.
Exactly.
He's an asshole.
He is a swashbuckling scoundrel who is, by his account, the greatest swordsman who ever lived.
The greatest swordsman who
which
ever lived.
It's like, at that time, if you're Willow, you're like,
you are the Augrite.
Yes, you are exactly. The as we will see, he is great. Mm-hmm. An incredible warrior, as we'll see, who has his own and a really great kind of development and evolution and journey. He's stuck. They find him in this cage because he probably pissed some. I can't remember. He's like pissed.
He's like a thief.
He that's as much as we get from the actual
went
movie.
Into business for himself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's this scoundrel character who's super likable and charismatic and charming, but he's just this low life.
Yeah.
But due to Val Kilmer's performance, he himself had a big evolution as a character as well. Like, he gets released. The next time, like, the Alora Dannon's stolen by brownies, which are these small, like almost rodent looking characters. Yeah. Like, small, they're peep.
They're the comic relief.
And I wouldn't even call his transformation throughout the movie an evolution. I think it's just an unearthing.
I
saw it in some commentary. It was kind of the parallel between him and Han Solo. Han Solo has a background. He's clearly not a bad person, but is in a life that, well, everybody makes their decisions and then you wind up someplace one day and this is just kind of what you're having to do to survive. It doesn't make you bad. And you were once upon a time probably virtuous and good of heart and you seek out the good option whenever possible. So it really kind of, I think when it comes to Mad Mardigan, it's more of an unearthing of that character than a growth.
Saying unearthing, it definitely, it gives this image of, you know, still very, you know, blooming, evolving, but still dirty. It's not a completely clean linear evolution or character growth, because he still has those moments to where, you know, he will, you know, call him Willow and respect Willow and see Willow's potential, but then turn around and call him Peck whenever he gets pissed off.
Which is a derogatory term.
Like, whenever he's like, Nelwyn's. Great, I knew I shouldn't have trusted
I've been
Peck.
Trying hard not to say the P word.
Just to quote Mad Martin.
It's a quote.
It's a quote. But he's like, I knew I shouldn't have trusted you. You do see a change in him that shows that he can be a compassionate character.
Oh, yeah. It, like anyone, when his expectations aren't met, he reverts back to, like, the disappointment and lashing out and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And the next time, because, like, the baby's stolen by the brownies, and the next time they see him, he's disguised as a woman. And he's sleeping with another man's wife and stuff. And through that, you see him, you're like, oh, normally you'd be like, God, this guy sucks. But the performance is so good
and goofy.
The character's written so well, it's tempting, but no. You know, it's just a really good character. Mm-hmm. And I love unearthing is a better way to put that, because, there's something there, but through a series of events, it's brought to the surface.
I think what helps is charm.
Yeah.
Is we've mentioned before, he's a goof, he's bumbling. It's just, I love the part where, because they find themselves outside of an encampment, because eventually they get captured by Sorsha and Bav Marta's soldiers, and the brownies have this broken heart, like dust, powder. It's like a love potion.
Yeah.
And Mad Mardigan gets some on him, and he like goes in and starts waxing poetic to Sorsha,
who kind of has a thing for him too.
Yeah, you know, someone who grew up without love in this very cold, callous environment. Yeah. So she kind of is feeling it, but then like she turns around and he meant to go in the camp to go get Alora Dannon out, and then like Sorcha sees that Willow went in himself and she thinks he's a traitor. So they're escaping down this outside of this like camp of all Sorcha and her men.
Yeah. Sorcha's Bad Morda's daughter, who's also like an accomplished soldier in Bad Morda's army.
Who she also has kind of a character turn in the third act. Really kind of before that a little bit, but definitely in the third act.
You can tell Kale is kind of like, "Are you afraid she'll turn against you, Bad Morda?" And she's like, "Nope." I mean, she says it a bit.
Yeah, which part of the storyline that is lost through deleted scenes, quickly talking about Sorcha, is originally there was more of a subplot about Sorcha and who her father was and how he was actually this very kind, gentle leader.
Yeah.
This you know, good character that, of course, anytime you take this very evil person like Bad Morda, you kind of have to show, they're off. She's not going to produce with somebody else that's super evil, awful.
Yeah.
But it's, I don't know, you produce this character like Sorcha that now is a representation of both good and evil on the spectrum of good and evil. And we see the father at the very end of the movie.
Yeah.
But because of deleted scenes and cutting out movie time, it is something that's lost in the storyline and why you become a little more understanding of how Sorcha switches over at the end there. It's not just for love.
Yeah.
Like this, you know, like, oh my gosh, it's finally somebody showing me love. Here's this man. He's an awesome warrior. Oh man, in the heat of battle, I've fallen in love and I need to switch sides. It really is finally her coming to an understanding of, I had this rough life. I grew up under, you know, Bad Morda and in this evil kind of wicked surrounding. But I have good inside of me.
Yes.
And even though this is what I come from, I no longer have to be this because I have something good inside of me. I can do something different. I can be someone different, which unfortunately is lost in the movie, Willow, unless you go and kind of dive in a little bit and see some of the deleted scenes and what they had to cut because of runtime.
That's a part of her arc that's lost.
Yeah, which is something I think the new series that's coming out is really going to, I'm sure, expose more of.
Sure.
Because, you know, unless you're diving into extra scenes and stuff, but it's still part of the mythos now.
Yeah. Right.
And needs to be understood.
Yeah, exactly. That
she's a far more dimensional character than just a woman that falls in love and now and has
switches
a change of heart.
Because it seems like, oh, she has to.
Yeah,
like,
I finally see what my mom's doing is evil because I have love in my heart. Well, it's more than just, you know.
Okay.
It's more than just her falling in love, but her realizing that there is good inside of her and that she doesn't have to fall down this road that she was, you know, raised in, even knowing that she had a father out there.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
But
you shed light on that because I was sitting to watch it and I was like,
that was one
thing. I've seen
this
so many times, but at the same time, it's like she just switched that quick, but that makes a whole lot of sense.
If you want to think of it as a part of the greater story, once you know about it, I would like to include it in the greater story.
Sure.
I love the movie as it is.
So you're asking for a director's cut.
Yes,
Ron Howard. I know you're listening. You bald. I can't say anything bad about you.
No,
I'm sorry.
I love Ron Howard.
But just to get back to something that it was goofy then charming with Matt Mardigan was when Willow's like, "You are great," when he finally sees Matt Mardigan, you know, sword fighting. Matt Mardigan like, you know, flips his sword and then he like slips on the snow, and it's
a banana peel moment.
Yeah, it's awesome. There's a lot of those.
It's on par.
And there's several leading up to, because they have to, once they get to Tir Ezzelin, which is like originally their end goal, because they're like,
Shalindria
is like, there's a wonderful king and queen that will take care of her and she'll be safe from evil. And then they get the Tir Ezzelin and Bav Morda destroyed.
Because she has to find Fen Rizal.
She has to find Fen Rizal.
And that's something we skipped over too about Fen Rizal. But
there's so many great characters.
And listeners, please forgive me. But guys, I got to hit another tangent quick with them getting to Terrace Lee and deleted scenes. There was a whole scene, and I think, Steven,
we watched this.
There's a whole scene where Willow uses his sleight of hand tricks to absolutely blow a troll's mind.
Yeah.
Like, the troll jumps down and attacks him. And instead of it being this whole thing where Mad Morgan has to jump in, hit the wall, come down, and, like, take on the troll, Willow, for about 45 seconds, is doing sleight of hand tricks and is blowing this troll's mind. Yeah, it's
like
mind. Those
videos when somebody does it in front of like a chimp.
Dog. Yeah. Or doing tricks in front of a dog.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh my God, what'd you do? What'd you do with it? Oh my God. And the troll is just spinning around like blown yes. mind. And then finally Willow just like kicks him in the ass.
he makes a rock appear.
Oh, that's right.
Like it's like the Indiana Jones thing.
Yeah. So again, we get a little bit of his sleight of hand later on when he, you know.
It was cut because it kind of slowed the pacing of the sequence.
And it did. And instead in the movie, it's the point where also Sorsha is watching Madame Mardigan getting ready to catapult himself, and she's just absolutely entranced.
Yeah.
So instead of us getting this kind of like little sleight of hand moment, they kind of had to mend up the storylines that weren't there anymore and drive the narrative that's already there forward. But you're right, though, Steven. Like, you were watching, you're like, man, I would have loved if that had been in there. Because it's campy, it's funny, and it allows this moment where you're dealing with a lot of special effects, a lot of things you're like, how did that two-headed monster come out of a troll? Does this happen every time a troll gets wet? I thought trolls lived under bridges, which are over water. Is this how gremlins happened? Yeah. I don't know.
Exactly.
And plus, we find out that Willow hates trolls. So to see that, you're like, oh, he's conquering his fear in a way.
It would have been trolls. Yeah, another deleted scene that would have been fun. And if you haven't seen it, definitely go. You can hop on YouTube and watch it. Ron Howard talks all about it. And there's another scene about a fish boy and kind of a little more stuff about finding Finn Rizel, which we haven't touched on yet.
We haven't talked about
this moment when Willow finally hears about Finn Rizel, goes, and then.
Well, let's do Finn Rizel and we'll get to Tyr's Lean because that's a huge moment for the Mad Mardigan character.
There was a big. Big jump in there because Finn Rizel is a pretty massive character. She is Bav Mordo's I don't know if we can call her equal, but she is the other side of Bav Mordo as far as wizardry and sorcery and magic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she's more like she's the good witch.
Yeah.
Like Wizard of Oz, who's the good witch, bad witch.
Yes.
Kind of thing.
And she presents this kind of like how Willow wants to be an apprentice under the High Alduin. Mm-hmm. She is now the figure on the journey who is helping Willow in the world of magic, which according to the High Alduin, Willow wants to be a sorcerer because magic is the lifeblood of the universe in this world. So,
I say midichlorian?
Midichlorian.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Like, no, there, it's not Star Wars.
It's Qui-Gon. What are midichlorians?
but essentially, Finn Rizel is the one who is going to be the next level of like showing Willow his potential. And like, not only do you need to know this so that you can reach your full potential and test your mettle in a way that will help you get to the level of a sorcerer that you want to, but also like it shows what role you need to play in bringing me back to being a human and protecting Alora.
I was
going to
say there's an added conflict because when they find Finn Rizel, Bav Morta turned her into like a small muskrat. Because she like exiled her to this island and turned her into this small rodent. And so as we continue on in this journey, she's coaching Willow because Willow has her wand, right?
She needs Willow.
Yeah. Well, she's Shalindria's wand. Rizel can.
Yeah, yeah.
Wood knows how to wield.
But she needs Willow to become what he needs to be. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, she can't step in and do her role.
Yeah.
Like, she can't step in and finally do what needs to be done and also take Willow to that next level personally.
Exactly. And plus, she just needs him to focus to turn because she goes from like a muskrat to a goat.
Oh, she was a crow in the middle
there.
Maybe probably not a crow. I think it might be a magpie.
Any
listener trying to dissect it, and of course go back and tell me it's not a magpie or a crow.
It was
tell
a bird.
Tell me it's another finch or some kind.
That bird is a liar. Where was Brian Fellows when Ben Rizal was like,
Yes. The bird is a liar.
But yeah,
ghost got devil eyes.
But basically, Willow. What? Yeah, just through all the conflicts, mm-hmm. she's stuck sticking by Willow to coach him because they need each other.
Yeah,
kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And she's Fennarzell's the key to all this.
Yeah, exactly.
And Rizel's like, if you turn me back, I will destroy Bavmorda. So mm-hmm. it's like this added motivation.
Yeah.
And finally, all of them get to Tir Ezzelin. It's been destroyed by Bavmorda. And this is when you sit there, and I always forget how badass of a warrior Mad Mardigan is. Because mm-hmm. up to that point, he's good, but he's a doofus. Mm-hmm. Like, there's several times where Willow's like, oh, Mad Mardigan, yeah. you know, kind of thing. Mad Mardigan, like, he walks, because everyone at Tir Ezzelin was destroyed.
Yeah.
And he walks into this room.
At least frozen. Everyone's frozen. Like frozen. Yeah.
He walks into this room with all these weapons. He's basically running around the whole compound.
He goes straight Arnold Schwarzenegger.
One man army predators. He's setting up all these traps and he's setting up. Aside from Willow, you know, prepare that catapult.
Mm-hmm.
He's going around. He finds this armor and he's basically by himself taking down mm-hmm. members of Bavmorda's army.
Yeah.
And like you mentioned, Andrew, like when Bavmorda's army gets there and Sorsha's just like enchanted by him, like just looking at him like,
yeah.
oh my God. Like, cause he's just running around taking out by yeah. himself all these people.
And he's not entirely alone because no. there's yeah. this there's this other army led by this soldier Eric who yeah. Mad Mardigan knows.
Who is from the village that you can tell Mad Mardigan's from and mm-hmm. They used to fight together and Mad Mardigan yeah. went rogue kind of thing.
Yes, I still fight for Galador. You fight yeah. for no one.
Yeah, which I'm... Great segue.
I fight for the no one.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yes,
I love it.
They reach, like, their backs.
Who
are
do
against,
you fight for?
Yeah, and Mad Mardigan reaches the point. He looks down at Willow, and he's like, I serve the no one. You
yeah.
know, kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, I serve the no one.
And
yeah.
So through that, he's like, who else is going to help me? And they yeah. all kind of this hodgepodge of soldiers and stuff yeah. go take on this big army. And one of my favorite... Because from Tir Ezzelin on, Mad Mardigan is like, he's the leader. Because
mm-hmm.
he'll step forward and be like, we've come for Alora Dannon.
Yeah.
And Bavmorda's like, pfft. But he's not scared.
Yeah.
Like, he's got this presence about him. And one of my favorite things he does is like, in Tir Ezzelin, they capture Alora Dannon. And Willow comes out, and he's just like, he's got blood on his face and mm-hmm. stuff, and he is just defeated. He's like, they took her. They took Alora Dannon, and like, what are we going to do? And he looks at him. He's like, Willow, can you ride? And Willow just kind of looks at him. He's like, let's ride, kind of yeah. thing. And I'm getting kind of chills talking
yeah,
about it. Because Willow, who's like the backbone of this operation, is like, I don't know what to do. And Mad Mardigan is like, hey. Let's ride.
Let's go. Another person who yeah. says, I believe in you.
Yes, exactly.
And I love seeing...
At this
point,
Sorsha has turned already,
yeah,
too.
And,
like,
and I love seeing
them.
The dynamic
face
between...
Face turn, baby.
Yeah, I love seeing the dynamic between Mad Mardigan and Willow, how
yeah.
that progresses
yep.
to where now when the chips are down
yep.
and where they truly have to, like,
yep.
you know,
yeah,
test your might, like yeah, Mortal
yeah,
Kombat.
I don't think we saw a partnership like that until Twins, and then maybe after that, 21 Jump Street.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
I'm kidding, by the way.
The great
that's
lexicon
so
of part team-ups. Great team-ups.
Twins, 21 Jump Street.
Willow, Mad Mardigan.
You know.
A tale as old time.
Right, exactly.
Beauty and the Beast.
But then essentially to skip right to the end, like
yeah.
there's the showdown.
Also, we could do like a 3-hour episode.
Yeah,
on
no,
this
but,
movie.
So there,
oh, yeah.
it's in the interest of time.
Again, if,
yeah.
if you've seen the movie, you know, and you like the movie, you know the appeal, and you know kind of what we're talking about. If you haven't, hopefully we pique your interest enough.
We've
so you
just
can,
done enough
so
to make you want to
so
watch
you can
it.
Kind of
yeah.
thread all these
yeah.
parts together.
Or you're
together.
Just like, what the hell are
yeah.
they
yeah.
talking about?
Because we haven't talked about brownies. Yeah, like we haven't talked about the brownies.
But
we
I think it's important to talk about just the general element, the overarching theme of the movie to where at the end you have, you know, very much the Gandalf and Saruman,
yeah.
like,
the brownies
fight.
Are these little characters that are comedic relief. There,
yeah.
we talked about.
yeah. Bavmorda is, you know, now Rizelle
mm-hmm.
is her
yeah.
sorceress self, and she's taking on Bavmorda. And essentially at the end, you know, both you know, Sorsa's down and Finn Rizal is down, and now
they get turned into pigs. I know that's earlier.
That's early, but now
the effects on that
incredible.
It's amazing,
kind of unsettling.
Pretty important. I mean,
industrial light and magic.
Yeah, because my friend at work, Kelsey, we were talking, and I was like, "You show her son's seven." It's like, "You show him Willow." She's like, "Is it scary?"
I was like,
"Well, there's a couple kind of unsettling scenes, a little scary." And then during that scene, I was like, "Oh shit, I forgot this scene's
intense." And the end scene where they're trying to duke it out in the sacrificial chamber, and the score, which we haven't even talked
James
about.
Horner.
The score,
oh my god,
James Horner! I don't mean to take us too far off there.
No, you're fine.
Who knows what road we're on?
The score leads us through the whole journey.
And
at the end when. It was like, Willow's back! Willow's back! Like, I started tearing up. And then when him and Kaya, in the score crescendo,
essentially, Willow has now, he's met his greatest challenge, and now it's how can I use everything that I've learned?
Yeah.
But then also, he just reverts back to one of his old tricks to show that...
An old parlor sleight of hand trick that he did at the beginning of the movie.
He has Allura Danann, and he's posturing to Bav Morda, who's almost not having any of it. And he's like, I'll send her to where no evil can touch her. Yeah. She's like, there is no such place.
Yeah.
And then he does his spell, and then... Bav Morda's like, you can't do it, you're posturing. And then he finishes his spell, and
Allura Danann is some quote unquote gone.
And it's the simple little thing that somebody at her level would have never even thought about, because she exists in this whole world.
Yeah.
But then he's like, all I need to do is a little bit of sleight of hand now, and you know nothing about sleight of hand. So it's sometimes that very simple solution. And that person that, think of Bav Morda. I think of living at that kind of level, what you look at somebody that has the answers that you need, has what you need.
Yeah.
You look and they go, oh, well, you're below me. Or,
you
know. So, I like that. Yeah, I love that's how it ends. It's that simple.
Yeah.
That's that simple kind of idea of you're overthinking it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Step back a little bit. You live in this grandiose world and just be like, oh, well, I just need you to think that I don't have this baby anymore.
And she doesn't die of shock. She's like, impossible. She, what? Like, this powerful sorceress dies of shock.
Yeah, no.
She extends her hand to strike him with the wand, and lightning strikes it.
Yeah, whatever evil force was going to be taking the soul and the power of the baby ends up taking her instead, because, again, at the end of the day, whatever force is at work doesn't care which one of you it is.
Exactly. You know? It's like Hellraiser.
But we're watching. Kind of Hellraiser.
It's like, we're just here for pleasure and pain. I don't care who did it.
Who is it? Yeah. You? Okay.
Exactly. But it's great because also it's a callback to earlier at this Nelwyn festival. You know, Willow is in town doing his magic, and he
it's
kind
a
of like,
pig trick.
Yeah,
I'm sure there's something too. It was also the seed sowing time. I'm sure there was some kind of fertility ritual going on.
Yeah.
People seem to be getting married.
With
bags over their heads.
Yeah,
I don't know
exactly.
But who they're gonna marry?
It's called an arranged marriage.
Essentially, it's this big trick he bungles because the pig starts squealing and running away, and everyone laughs.
And then at the end, he's like, "It's my old disappearing pig trick."
Yeah, like, where is the baby? And she's like, "Over here. It's my old disappearing pig trick."
And again, Warwick Davis, the way he just delivers lines stuck with me as a kid.
Yeah.
Like, certain things I'd would rewind. Same with Mad Morrigan. I would just the way they would say things, I'd rewind it just because I liked the way they said something.
Oh, yeah. But then
he stole our black root.
Yeah.
Never give a baby black root.
Yeah. I said it all the time.
Yeah.
But
to nobody.
No, I do.
I do too. Yeah.
Black root.
I was finishing the line in my head.
don't worry, we'll find more black.
Yeah, exactly.
But then at the end, much like in a Return of the King, to where everyone looks to Willow, and not like in Return of the King, to where Aragorn's like, you don't have to bow to anybody.
Yeah.
But it's essentially Finn Rizal telling Willow, "Well done, you can go home now."
Yeah.
And then. But now Willow is going home a more capable person.
Confident. Self-assured.
He's Willow's back! And he's riding through. He's riding with this confidence. And one of the people he sees is the High Alduin, who grabs his hand and essentially saying, He
knew it all along.
You are seeing the potential within yourself
mm-hmm.
that you were inhibiting because of your self-doubt. Mm-hmm. Now you've gone through.
Go and live it.
Yeah.
Go and live it. And finally, it's bookended with who he really lives for, and that's his family. And he's Kaya coming back, and which is I get teared up, more and more, realizing the weight of that moment. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there's so many more great moments threaded within there that really adds to the charm of Willow the character, Willow the movie. And the end is just so wonderful because when he's back in his element, a place, a bubble he was never comfortable in leaving, he is now more capable in leading in that environment.
And that happens in real life. That's what happens when you step outside your comfort zone.
Well, also, that's why you go and become uncomfortable. And that's, you know, that's... It's the other side of all of it is, okay, we had this fantastic journey that we just saw. And I mean, Lord of the Rings kind of kept coming back with another story. Yeah. But what I've enjoyed about Willow until, of course, the show that's coming back now is they just kind of, they dropped it. Willow went back and I'm sure the graphic novels or the comics that came out, I'm sure the world expanded, but the movie itself and why I'm happy they never made a sequel I guess up until now.
We'll see where the series goes.
It leaves you with going, all right, well, I mean, you can't live on the mountaintop the whole time. I mean, it's easy to be a holy man on the mountaintop, but like, what happens when you, and not say he became a holy man on a mountaintop, but what do you do when the experience is over? You gotta go back to your life and you gotta live it, you know. It's so like, not everything can be like epic all the time. Eventually you gotta, like, okay, well, now we did the thing, what lessons did we learn, and now how do we go just live life knowing these new things, you know, and knowing this new stuff about ourselves and and how we respond in situations, and, you know, how can we, you know, just let this be a growth thing. But, you know, what do you do when the story's over? And that's where I think the movie is awesome, because it kind of leaves you there. And I'm sure that you can say that about a lot of movies, but we're just left with Willow going, hey, all right, awesome, you went back to the village and everybody's super excited.
He didn't get a bag full of gold.
Burgle Cut gets pooped on. This is a great ending.
Exactly. And that's all you really needed to happen to Burgle Cut. It's like, you're an asshole, but you're harmless. You got pooped on. All right.
But it shows, there's at the end of the journey, it's about going back to it and being with the ones that you love and sharing that growth with them. And it's not about going out and finding the next adventure, because that defeats the purpose, you know?
Right.
The whole idea is that these moments find you, and
then
what do you do when you champed them?
And it's one of my favorite parts in the movie is when I think it's Rizal who tells Willow, you know, I don't want to say executing, but you're executing this journey and this higher purpose. Think of how your children will speak of you.
Yeah.
Like, think about that. Even if, you know, Lord, you know, or heaven forbid you lose your life, think of how your children will remember you and how you, you know, did this for a purpose greater than yourself. And to go back to kind of wrap up what you said there, Andrew, and like, you know, you can't always live on this mountaintop high. How are you going to use these new things about you?
Yeah.
It reminds me of the last line in Hook where, Peter, you know, Peter Banning has just come back from Neverland. And Granny Wendy, who's elderly now, is like, so boy, what's the next great adventure? And he's like, to live would be the greatest adventure.
Yeah.
And then as we see in the series, there's a new threat out there, but now we will see, hopefully.
New threat, but probably the same old threat.
It's something Willow has seen before. Now he'll use you know, his new standing, his life experience to take on the next great calling, and who he's, you know, how he's gonna be a leader, and how he's gonna help save the world.
Yep.
Essentially, it is a wonderful movie.
It's fantastic.
And also something real quick, just I know we're probably at the end here, but we haven't talked about is Alora Dannon, the baby that played that character. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say that baby played the character because she's excellent. The most expressive baby.
Super expressive.
That I mean, Baby's Day Out is a movie that comes to mind when I think about how expressive of a character Laura Dern is with her face. And that's a great credit to the people that shot the movie.
Right. Yeah,
the guys behind the camera, the individuals behind the camera, the people in post that saw those moments and put them in there perfectly, but what an expressive baby.
Oh yeah, that was something I noticed.
Which was a lot of fun, and it made that character more than just the baby they had to haul around and try to get off because they're get off to the next Daikini person.
Yeah.
And she's super important, all this stuff, but unless you have... which is hard. I can't imagine how hard that is, but to get a child that young to be that expressive, to be more than just a driving point of the plot, but really a character.
Yeah. And plus, when you know that she, though she's not verbal, like she's communicating, essentially her instincts are speaking for her, and that's expressed very well.
The people that did that work in post, I mean, just absolutely cut that perfectly because, again, something we hadn't talked about, but the baby that was Laura Dern and the faces that she put on and how that actually still was a character.
Yeah.
Even though she couldn't express that through words. Makes the movie all that more, not just enjoyable, something you can watch, but...
convincing.
It hit me in the heartstrings. Yeah, of course. It's one of those movies that, like, I care about Laura Dern, and you know, I want to.
At the end, when she's like tied down and crying, like,
and it's hard to love a baby when they're crying.
I was just about to say it's not like the oh god. It's more like poor baby. No, good help. Yeah, exactly.
Not to say I hate kids.
No, absolutely not. I think anyone. I love kids, but I think they're tested when a baby is continually crying, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So.
On that note, anyway. No, but, I mean, Andrew, thank you for joining us again.
Excellent. No, thanks for having me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a great discussion about a wonderful movie, just an absolutely wonderful movie. I am looking forward to the show.
Agreed.
I would like to see. It looks like Joanne Whalley is back. Warwick Davis is back.
Oh, the TV show. I thought you were talking about this episode.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. The TV show. You know, Kevin Pollak is one of the Brownies. I think Kaya might be the woman who played Kaya might be back.
Yeah,
but it looks like there's some returning people, which is great. Even if it were just Warwick Davis, that'd be wonderful.
I'd like to see, because I saw Top Gun Maverick and Val Kilmer's in it. But they give that character a lot of dignity, all things considered, because Val Kilmer has had throat cancer and he had a tracheotomy, and he is a shell, physically a shell of his former self. But they handled his character with a lot of dignity. Hopefully, they do something with Mad Mardigan.
Yeah,
they may not. They may go back to Sorsha, and she's like, ever since Mad Mardigan died, or something like that. I don't know.
But yeah, we'll see. I say I'll check it out, but. I've said that about a lot of Disney Plus shows, and I just don't get around to it.
Yeah.
But Willow does kind of pull on the heartstrings a little bit.
Even before, I think why I wanted to do, because we had trouble thinking of a 100th episode.
We were thinking too big.
We were thinking too big, but then I watched the Willow trailer from Disney Plus, and I was like, Willow.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Willow.
Let's do it.
It's like it's such an important movie to us, and I almost can't think of anything else for a 100th episode that I would want to cover.
Yeah,
episode 100,
crazy.
It's crazy. I mean, we got about 68 in with PGP. We got almost 50 with Sucktastic, but this is the one that we're at 100, and I know it's kind of like. I know it's cliche to say there's so many people to thank, like the Oscar speech to wrap up. They're really we couldn't have done it without all our guests.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't the end.
No,
it's definitely not the end. We got 100
more in our.
We got a lot of stuff we want to do, including video. We will do video.
Yes, I know we've been saying that.
You want to see these faces?
Yes.
Oh hell yeah!
Yeah, you want to see these faces, baby? You want to see us get demonetized by YouTube?
Yes.
But
frightening images.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Hate speech. I didn't say anything.
I didn't say anything. Yeah.
But thank you.
Yeah.
To everybody. Mm-hmm. And I know sometimes when you hear thank you, you know who you are. Sounds disingenuous. Seriously.
Yeah.
Like, we could be here all day thanking people by name, because there's so many of you that we would keep doing it, but it wouldn't be as worth it if it wasn't for all
of you
out
there. We don't get paid to do this either.
No.
We don't have sponsors.
That's one of the main questions people ask when they hear we've done a podcast. So, do you guys get paid? It's like, no.
Yeah.
No, it's you. There's so much goes into it to get paid.
But a lot of bigger podcasts would probably look at like our download counts per episode and scoff at it.
I get that in 45 seconds, they would say.
Yeah, exactly. But like, we're creative people.
Mm-hmm.
This is like, we've been talking about pop culture shit our whole lives. So this is a great outlet for that.
Yeah.
And plus, like, as we grow as people, we can kind of implement that into the show. And stuff,
it's been a great 100 episodes. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. Everybody who's listening now, who's ever listened, who has ever been on the show, who will continue to be on the show.
Yep.
Whether you do the art for us, whether you give us suggestions, whether you just listen, we love you.
Yeah.
Thank you. And we cannot wait to continue.
Yeah, exactly.
Until the next time.
Be good to yourselves. Be good to each other. Because why would you want to be rude when you could be rad? We'll see you next time.
This concludes our broadcast day.